Recording. Hi everyone. Welcome Wagwan. Well, that's TBI. Wagwan. Episode 206. 206 amazing, episodes of absolute guff. No, like, just unnecessary chat.
Bullshit.
Just oh man, just we need to just delete it all off the internet. But we've got a very special guest streaming in live from the US of Colorado, I believe, Gareth Reynolds.
Hello. Hi Carl. Hi Julian.
Comedian.
Hey,
podcaster. Yes. Act? Do you act? A lot of American stand-ups.
I moved to LA to act, but then the business sort of decided that wasn't the path for me. So
yeah. I wanted to act, but the world didn't want me to.
They wouldn't let me.
I was heavily rejected. It was so sometimes.
Yeah. Because it's much more common for American stand-ups to sort of do act. Acting is a much more acceptable thing. Like in the UK, it's always, I don't know, it doesn't seem to have that trajectory where we're much more act, do some like quite crap panel shows on television, and
yeah,
then
the panel
tour.
Shows
and that's it.
Are a great loophole that we just don't have here.
I'm fascinated by that. I don't think there isn't. I mean, I suppose historically you'd have had.
I feel like they're
like
dying a little bit now, though, aren't they? Even in the UK,
are they? Yes,
yeah, they still do well in Australia too. I mean, it's so strange because my goal was to act, and then it was almost like because that wasn't working out, stand up, and that became more of an avenue for me versus the opposite. But every time my mother lives over there, and every time I'm there, I watch the panel shows. I'm like, why do we not?
Is this Australia?
In England. Yeah, okay.
Because you went to Australia when you did. Because a friend of mine was a guest on your podcast, Justin Hamilton.
Oh, yeah. Hammo.
Yeah, he's a
sweet
good friend
little
of mine.
Hammo. Loves the animals. I go to Australia probably once or twice a year, once for my podcast or once every 18 months for my podcast. And then I'll gig there, you know, once every couple of years for sure. So, love Hammo. Yeah, but those panel shows there, they just crush. And they just never have taken. They try them here all the time, and just not the same sauce.
I don't know. Yeah, it's an odd one. I mean, in Australia, I think even more so than here. Like, because here it used to be, if you got on a panel show, it could literally, make you very successful. In Australia, I think they have that now. They're having this weird boom of. I know people that have did a few appearances in Australia on like I've forgotten the name of the really well known one. Or have you been
Home
paying attention?
Away.
Yeah, Home and Away is a great panel show. So good. It's a strange panel show, too. It's one of the weirder panel shows.
Yeah. Ramsey Street as well. It's a weird setup.
Very strange. The whole vibe is not even of a panel show, which I just think is confusing.
Each contestant's got their own house. It's just...
And there's the audience is meant to be silent, and it's very bizarre.
Yeah. They sometimes walk by in the background. It's bizarre.
That must have been attempted at some point. There must have been some TV executive or a bunch of comics must have tried to have an improv show that was a sitcom. You just start and then you have it turns into a half an hour. I mean, it sounds like it'd be a catastrophe.
That's what they're trying now with the writer's strike in LA. They're is it possible to improvise a half hour?
Leonardo DiCaprio, can you improv this film?
Just improv
a mega buster film. CGI is just improv.
A Marvel movie. We can't tell you what's on the green screen.
Just wing it. Go.
Here's an outfit.
You don't know whether to scream or not. Is it a shark attack?
Just give us every emotion that you've got in 30 seconds and we'll work around it. You write as well. You've written on television.
Yes.
So what's your, because obviously, so are you like the writer's strike? Because we don't really have an understanding of the writer's strike in the UK because writers here, we get paid so shit if you write for television that, you know, striking wouldn't work. It's not really unionized as such. And
I just feel we wouldn't be that loyal either. Like people are just carrying on
English comedians and, I think it's more mercenary
it's
here.
A team sport, I guess.
Everyone would be like, let's strike. And you'd be like, yeah, let's strike. And the moment they all strike.
You get in touch with the
production company and be like, right, I'm free for the next few weeks.
My diary's pretty clear, guys.
You seem to be very good at in unions and other sex and stuff like that. But
good, like working class industries, we've got good unions, but what we'd probably deem as sort of the luxury industries, that the
I like suppose the writers arts. And comedians in England are like more like just fucking a bit more maverick and a bit of a narcissist, I guess.
But also, I just don't think there's as much of a respect for the you know, for each other, the writer in this country.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. Back to the panel shows.
Yeah, exactly.
I think part of the deal here is just that the union is so good that if you're in it,
they look after you.
Yeah, the benefits are just amazing. And yeah, the pay is really good. And I think it's also that it's very transparent what's going on right now. And I think that people are just like so fed up with it that, you know, and I'm like, I haven't been working as a union writer for like a few years because, you know, the business has changed dramatically. So, but even then, I mean, I just look at like these dudes who are making the amount of money that they're making, everyone's just really pissed off. So think because you realize how much is generated from Hollywood, that it's just so unfair. I think that's part of it too. But I know that you guys over there that pay the deals are just so vastly different.
Oh my God. Like right in here, you just don't like, it's all about live performance here. Really?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Like there's like, you know, you could have a hit, sitcom here, and like, you know, if you're writing on it, if it's your vehicle that you're writing, you're not getting much money for the actual writing side of it at all. That's why you see a lot of people then going into live stuff off the back of a hit TV show,
because
they know that they can make so much money.
It's kind of like the music industry. It's like if you have the album, you don't really make shit off that anymore, but you can go make your money touring.
Exactly. But because what do you write on Arrested Development?
I did, I wrote on. Is maybe the last two seasons or like the last splintered season?
I love the rest of Development.
It's so fun.
I come in at the end when the show's sort of fading away. I
stopped watching it actually.
That's the ones you haven't seen. I worked on. They took about a year. So the ones you haven't seen are mine.
Okay, cool. How many seasons were there in total? I can't remember.
I think there's five seasons, but I think that last season is split over kind of two half seasons. Basically.
Right. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. That's great
for your TV, though, isn't it? What a great show, man, to have on your TV.
Oh, it's the greatest.
Yeah.
I mean, all joking aside,
I mean, it's
like
on my TV as well, but I've just never actually written on it. Yeah.
I would be honest, if I watched it, I'd be like, I don't know how much of this I actually wrote. They change things
right
to the very end, and there is constant tweaking. But even just being around the people who created it, and then the actors who were on it, it was like the first time I walked into their like set of their apartment, their penthouse, I was like, this is one of these weird moments where I shouldn't be here.
There was actually a question about that. We put it out that you were coming on, and one of the questions said, because again, we don't really have writers' rooms as a tradition here, either. Like, it's not really a concept you have. So, somebody, what's his name? James said, on Arrested Development, with so many writers and characters, do you get assigned to write dialogue for particular characters, or is everything an amalgamation of all the writers? How does a writer's room work? It's so out of our remit.
They just pitch ideas forward, I guess.
Is it? So, it's just you're literally throwing ideas around.
Yeah, it's basically an amalgamation. It's basically you have someone whose job, like on Arrested Development, this person's job is insane, is like a writer's assistant, and they're just supposed to write everything down. And they're just like a stenographer. But even then, you're going, this poor son of a bitch, this is not great.
Oh, man.
And
on like a whiteboard or on their...
On the laptop, just like...
Yeah.
Sort of like a courtroom transcriber.
Yeah, you have a bunch of stuff on the boards and stuff, so you know kind of the direction of what you're pitching in. But then you're just kind of acting it out and you're pitching it out. And like on Arrested Development, like Mitch Hurwitz, he does all the voices and, you know, so he's acting out like, you know, the characters, and he's being Job and Tobias and all that. And so you're sort of sitting there and you're just kind of pitching, and then it's all getting written down, and then you start to revisit it. And then if you get assigned an episode, like that's why when you see like this episode was written by, you know, this person, that person just eventually went off and took a lot of the ideas, added some stuff for sure, but basically knew what they were going to go do.
Right.
Gave you a version of it to sort of come back with and start off. What's it's like a community to start. And then
fun environments, or like what's it like if you drop what you think's really funny and it just fucking bombs?
Well,
you
first of all, I mean, you get so used to bombing. I mean, you really do. I mean, because I don't even know what a good success rate would be, but it would be like 20% would probably be a good success rate. Yeah. So you, sorry, this is tough for Julian to hear. This is really, yeah.
I'm at 20% hit rate. Shit, man. I'd love to get to that level.
I know. Yeah. It's not bad.
Oh my God.
Well, if you think about it,
I'll give it another 10 years. I reckon I might get to 20%.
Well, when you think about it, like stand up, it's like you are. You know, think about all the shit you try out and you're like, well, that was trash or that needs a lot of work. You know,
yes.
You kind of have to become very not precious about it, but it is fun. I mean, if you're in a good room, it's really fun.
Right.
If you're in a bad room, it can be very tough. I mean, I became like, I do a bad job of being like, oh, whatever. Like, I'll just be like, well, that is actually the key. And here we are again, ignoring it, you know?
But what is there pressure to laugh? Like, I mean, if you're sitting there and somebody else goes, right, I've got this great idea, like, and they really lean into it, you know, what's the etiquette if it is crap?
It's tough. I think you kind of go like, oh yeah, okay, yeah, and then you kind of, you know, you give that like 20 seconds of silence. You give that.
Right,
Gives
me some ideas.
You know, it could also be interesting if they're buying a car. You do that sort of like, let's just nicely depart out of here.
But are you quite competitive with the others? So therefore, you want to like kind of make them die on their ass a bit. You're just, even if it's really funny, you're just dead fucking eyes. Yeah, good one. Good one, mate.
Real good. I think you want people to succeed. It's a little different in stand-up, whereas like, you know, like in stand-up, you'll be like, hey, he's really funny.
Yeah.
I love it. In a writer's room, because you know you're all kind of working towards this common goal, you do kind of want more success. And there are times where you'll be in a writer's room and be like, this woman is like the funniest person in the room.
And you'll just be like,
she, or she's like got the best story ideas. But I was Julian, you'll get canceled. You've got to be really. I think I actually have to leave. I think I'm getting canceled. My agent just emailed me.
My internet's not working,
guys. We're all canceled.
Yeah. With that, I said the careers of
whatever. You'll be like, just canceled me.
You'll be like,
just stay still, pretending it's crashed.
Some of my favorite comics are women. I'm only playing around.
I know.
Julian, don't do this.
That, obviously.
Julian. This comeback. That now sounds weird. Like the fact,
this, I think if we got I were it, you, was a joke.
We got it was a joke. Women.
Yeah.
Go harder right. The move is to not try to come back. Go harder right. No,
I love women. Exactly. Almost like creepily. I'm good.
Julian, Julian, as a friend, you are not digging in the right direction.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Trust me, I've seen this. You want success because eventually, you know, you want more episodes, you know.
Yeah.
Because I mean, it's all because I think it's that funny thing of like, there's not as a stand up, it's the most fun thing is watching somebody absolutely die, you know. Man. Like,
I try to explain that to people.
It's mad when you think about
that
it,
even,
especially if it's a friend as well. Though, if a friend has a bad gig in front of you, that is the holy grail.
Like, when a bit doesn't work and they just go to the crowd, or you know, they're not enjoying it because of things they're doing.
God. Like, when you know them well enough to see the moment, they just give up.
When you can hear the inner monologue, you're like, this is the best thing I'm going to see you this week.
I love it.
That's the first time
I went to Australia to do gigs was in 2011. And I did a show with two other UK comedians. And it was quite a tricky room. It was a big theatre, tiered. It was like the rest of the year, it was a sort of lecturing hall for the university. So it's very sort of soft walls. There was no atmosphere really, but like, you know, the audiences were nice, but you couldn't really, even when they were laughing, you could hardly hear it because it was soaked into the walls. And then me and Sean Walsh, one of the other comics, we just found it really funny that we were used to doing like the Comedy Store in London, where it's 400 people losing their minds, and suddenly you're playing to 600 very polite Melbourne people who like laughing, and you could hardly hear the laughs. So me and him just started, whenever one of us did a joke that didn't really get much, like we would audibly make noises from the back of the room. So like Sean would do a joke and it wouldn't get much, and from the back you'd hear me really loudly go like that. And then he'd do it back to me when I was on stage, and we just found it so funny, because if you do a joke that doesn't work, you inside you're like, oh god, and then just hearing somebody go at the back of the room, it's I love it. It's
I like that, like memories of the darting. The laughs leave easily, but like the fart noises are really they carry oh, well, man. In the room.
Yeah, you really just
Well, I also think like when you
like really resonate.
Yeah, when you like when you're at, like sometimes I'll like have a high energy bit and I will be like tired at the end and people will be like, oh yeah. And I'm like, I really just from pure exertion, I deserve a little. It's so bad.
The effort that you put into that.
Oh man.
Yeah. Or like when you go to get like a sip of water and you're thinking like some applause or laughter will carry you.
The but applause then you hear like, breaks it.
Yeah, you hear the water hit the stool and you're like, well, that is very audible.
Yeah, you can hear that. You can hear the gulp, that sort of. Oh, God. It's disgusting.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, my favorite ever one, there was in 2008, one of my first sort of Edinburghs, I did a show with three other guys, and it was called the Big Value Comedy Show. Mm-hmm. And
I did that. It was in.
Do you do Big Values? What year did you do?
2010. I did it. Yeah.
Oh, so yeah. So it's, yeah. So and was it in the big cave at the
cave?
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a night. It was a cool room. It was a proper cave and like very dank, atmospheric.
Like a drip of condensation would land on you in the middle.
They literally
like stalactites.
A lot of those caves were used for like plague victims back in like 400 years ago, whatever. So like, and now they're just comedy venues.
I love the UK. This was a former plague hang.
But I'm not the only one who died here.
Oh man! But some of the gigs were hard, man, because it was a very cavernous room, and like on the nights when it wasn't very full, man, they were tough gigs. But there was one of the other comics, Stuart Hudson, who sadly passed away about 6 years ago. But he was really funny, but so deadpan. Really. Like, so when he had a bad gig, it really went bad. You know, like.
Yeah.
There was nothing to carry it.
Yeah, right.
And then, but
people
there was
don't get it. Yeah.
No, but there was a gap at the back of the stage that the audience couldn't see. There was like a secret, almost tunnel across the back of the stage. But for some reason, one night when Stuart was having a really bad gig, me and Charlie Baker, a comedian, just thought it'd be funny to roll something across the back of the stage. So the audience would be watching him having a bad gig. And we found on the bar a bowl of lemons.
Oh,
so on every punchline he landed that didn't get a laugh, we rolled a lemon across the back of the stage. So like the audience would just see him do a joke, it wouldn't get a laugh, and then just see out of nowhere a lemon just roll across the back of the stage and roll off the other side. And then it started getting laughs. And so suddenly he was like, oh, I think I'm getting them back.
Oh no, that's even worse.
And it was just lemons, man. We were just lemoning him. I mean, it became a real thing over the run. We'd start lemoning each other. Like, so you'd be on stage and a laugh would happen, and I'd be like, that's a fucking lemon, isn't it? It's gave me this constant paranoia.
And then you're actually hitting and you're like, that was a lemon. And it's like, no, that joke hit. Now I'm looking for a lemon like a psychopath.
I know. It was so fun. I was so unprofessional when I was a new comic. Start out a professional. I was always just, I played around more then than I do now.
I think when you're starting off and you're so kind, there is a bond between the people you see at a lot of shows, and you're just, you know, you're all kind of bombing pretty regularly that you really are. There is like a really nice freedom in that of being like, this is so low stakes because I'm doing 7 shows a week or whatever it is. Yeah. And we all bomb pretty often because we don't know what we're doing yet, where you can do that, where you can like, I remember a guy one time, I ended up realizing this was stolen from a movie, but he goes, how many times do you think I can meow during my set? And I was just like, wow, I was like 20. And he'd like did 30 meows. Like he would just be like, meow, meow, meow. And people would be like, what the fuck is going on? And I would be in the back like, oh, this is for me. This whole set is for me.
Oh, God.
At the end of the run, the last gig of our Big Value, so there's like about 28 gigs or something in the last night of Edinburgh. I had a feeling they were going to do it because they did it last year, but they start doing your material, the other act.
Oh, yeah. That's
so
fun.
So they went on, and I'm hearing my joke, done better. But like, and it was so, but it was such an in joke. The audience just turned a little bit because no one's delivering it right. It's just all shit.
Yeah. Well, it's a hard one, isn't it? It's that fine line between having, as an audience, it's quite fun watching comedians obviously have a laugh and mess around. But when it becomes just pure self-indulgence and it's not funny, and you're basically like watching that, people. You've paid for a ticket and you suddenly just see people just like having a, you know, it, doing it on purpose, almost ruining the gig on purpose. I can imagine it being quite a jarring.
That was the year that one of the comics got the hump and threw the mic stand into the crowd. It was fucking
holy
mad.
Shit.
Who
was
that? Wait,
why?
It up just... And threw it into the crowd. Because he was
you
having
can say.
A...
Can you say? Is it, will it get in trouble?
Nah, it's common knowledge, I think, but I don't know. Is this going out public? Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll say to our patrons.
No, this is just for us. We're just having a chat.
Should we start recording?
I thought we were just having a Skype. Oh, what are you on about?
Is this the podcast?
I thought I met you guys on the comic dating app. Are we not? What is this?
We're just building up to it. We're just knocking one out.
What if you guys did that?
Through Hinge.
And then right now we're like, all right, well, let's start recording.
Oh, mate, the funniest, Julian did that during the pandemic. We did a bunch of episodes on Zoom during the pandemic. And there was one we did of a comedian, Michael Legg. Real funny. We'd laughing for an hour. And at the end of it, Julian was doing the recording side of it. And and I could see as we were wrapping up. Julian's face go a bit funny. And he went, oh, and I went, yeah, well, you're all right. And he went, oh, no, I just think there's some, there might be an issue. No, it'd be fine. I could see the moment he said it was fine, I was like, he's not recorded it.
Yeah.
And we let Michael go. And I just knew, the moment we hung up, I was like, that is 100% an hour-long conversation that is never going anywhere.
Why you're a great guy, Carl, is because you let him go. You didn't want, you let Julian, you let the mistake like sink in, and you didn't say in front of him, so what, you don't have it? So you let him go, and then you email and go, hey, man, listen, there was a real fuck up. We don't know what happened.
I remember, like, I think Julian had to contact Michael.
I didn't know how to say it, so I didn't.
You've just got to make up such a big lie is all you've got to do.
I just laid on my back for a little while and then just text them. Really apologize.
Just lying on your back on a floor.
Well, it's better to have a friend. It's better to have you two be like, hey, we lost it, than Julian in the moment be like, well, this. I'm so sorry. Because that guy's like, hey, that was a good podcast. Let him go off, do other things.
Oh, man.
Have some
chat. I felt so bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
But
We've lost live episodes on my show where we're like, that was awesome. Yeah. And then you listen to the recording and it sounds like, you know, it like someone sent space math down from another, you know, you're just like, what is this? There's a lot of that, which is horrible, that feeling, though.
Yeah.
And do you record yours live, like a video? Do you have a studio and stuff?
It really varies. I mean, since I'm gone a lot, and so we do some, we try to do it together. We try to do it together in a studio normally, but we also tour the show. So we'll do a lot of, like, you know, shows on the road and stuff like that. And that's really where our recordings get the most fucked up. You know, you'll be handing a recorder to a guy who's sort of like, so what is a podcast? And you're like, don't love that right off the bat. You know, they're like,
so what are you doing with the recording? Where's
that need me to come in with like sound effects? You're like, that is, I don't know what you're used to, but that's not happening.
We've got a question. We've got a few questions, but we should probably actually sort of start doing them. But can I bring it up on
screen?
Here we go.
Should we start recording this? I think that'd be a good idea.
This is from Colin. In terms of a dollop, he says, what's the maddest episode? Do you remember what the maddest episode is? Because obviously it's a comedy history podcast where you just pick something quite almost at random. It feels like it's sort of a random historical personal event. And then you just laugh and talk about it.
I have the easiest gig, and the guy prepares, he spends like 10 to 20 hours, Dave Anthony, and he spends like 10 to 20 hours preparing a story. And then I just show up and it's normally crazy.
So you don't do any prep, like you're hearing about you're learning about it in real time.
I do nothing. Fun. He came up with it, so it's his fault.
Right.
Yes. But he's furious all the time because he'll be like in his room, like, you know, working with a deadline. And I'll be like, you want to go get pizza?
12 hours a day.
Yeah. Yeah.
You rock up with a coffee all yawning and like,
and if I say I'm tired, you know, I'll be like, I'm tired. He's like, you're tired. I'm like, well, no, I'm not.
I think I'm
not
tired. Too much. Can you sleep?
Yeah. Oh, you ever nap so much?
Look at your sleep score. Oh, yeah, I got a 95 last night. Shit. Sometimes you sleep. Sometimes you sleep too well.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, I overdid it again. I overdid it on sleep again. I wish I were you. You have to get up to do stuff. I have not.
Oh, man. I got a terrible sleep score last night. Sorry, when I mentioned that, I suddenly was like, I've upgraded my Fitbit recently, and I'm sort of I'm obsessing. But last, I went to a funeral yesterday, and I got so drunk afterwards but like the wake, I just got a bit.
Whose funeral was it?
It's my friend's mum. She was old and ill, and yeah, he was pretty stoic about it all. But like afterwards, we had the wake, and just we were all drinking, and then like everyone went home apart from me and him, and me and him just carried on until God knows when, and like my sleep score reflected that quite heavily.
Your sleep score is like, this is an intervention VL watch. Well, sorry to hear that. Also, wake is a terrible term for a thing after someone. Name wake makes you feel like you have some hope that they'll be back.
Yeah, so you literally named it after the thing they physically can't do.
Yes,
so,
the thing they'll never do again. Let's just really rub that in.
Yeah, yeah.
We've done so many insane episodes. Well, just off of what you said, we did one where this guy's—I don't even remember what the name of this one was. I mean, again, the podcast really is like 80% of the time you're like, what the fuck just happened? Yeah. But this guy's wife died and he just like kept her for months and was still
what is that legal?
In America, there's so many gray zones. I would say no, but it still happened.
But what's the law you've broken? Like, I suppose... Like, you know, if they've died of natural causes, is it like it does fall? As I imagine, it does open up a gray area legally.
I'm gonna tell
the authorities, but just give me a bit of time.
You know? I think the problem was he was opening up a gray area on her and continuing the consummation process.
Oh yeah, that is illegal.
I feel comfortable saying in this insane nation. You can't do that. I think we've united on that.
Political correctness gone mad, in my opinion.
I love
how he's sleeping with the dead.
Talk about getting cancelled.
It's unbelievable.
Tell me I can't.
It's a nanny state. I've always said it's a nanny state.
That's absolutely, we are cops.
Well, he was having sex with her still,
For ages after the...
I just had to spill it out for our listeners.
Yes. He was doing what we call dead banging, continuing to
dead wife, right?
Fluid exchange with a corpse, just to really hit the hammer.
I mean, I suppose the only
must have been really fit for him to do that.
If memory serves, she was worth it. If memory serves, most of us would take a crap.
Was she like a 10? Yeah,
she was a 10. Dead, she was an 8, but that's still pretty good.
That is great. I mean, that's I see them as
11s when they die. Not really.
Yeah, no,
God. She was an LA 10.
She was an LA 10. A dead, she was an LA 10-8.
Right. Yeah, okay. I suppose what's the legality, or what if, like, and again, I'm spitballing here.
Asking for personal usage.
What if it was her final wish that they continued their marriage post death? Like,
well, now you're making me want to put something in my will that really I still want to be banged.
Yeah. Spell my name correctly.
Explicitly.
Or you know, like those movies where they'll be like, you have to spend a night in a haunted mansion for my inheritance. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'll be like, who fucks me the hardest at all?
Yeah, yeah. There's been some judges judging the hardest.
That's going to be my final wish of my
other. It has to be sensual as well.
Yes. Yeah,
that'd be quite a funny final wish. Like, I want my corpse to be kept at all of my relatives' house for one night, and it's got to be in, like, it's got to be sat at the end of their bed.
Yeah, it's going to be wrapped up. Yeah. Yeah.
There's quite a famous story about, have you ever heard the story, Julian, about Jimmy White, the snooker player? There was a famous, like, one of the greatest snooker players of all time, Jimmy White, was quite a drinking sort of party guy. When he died, there's this famous apocryphal story that his brother and friend stole his body from the crematorium and took it on a pub crawl around all their favorite old pubs as a sort of like last hurrah. So I literally sat his corpse in the
like
the
a weekend
of the pub.
At Bernie's kind
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah.
But it was like, I just went to like two or three of his pubs. He was literally a regular and like knew everyone. And so apparently,
it's a nice
went
idea, through. But actually doing it is fucked up, isn't it?
Like, yeah.
I agree. I think that's right. Yeah. It is like on paper, you're like, that'd be nice. And then you're out and you're like, the vibe is
loving brother.
Great.
Wait a minute. What?
Imagine you're like, it's your first time in that pub. You're just wandering. Oh, you just moved to the area. You know, just go in to see what your local
I think he's
like.
Had one too many. Yeah.
Yeah. That guy's shit faced.
Yeah. Rigor mortis is taking half of his face off.
All right. Let's play some snooker.
Yeah.
Jeez, that's too much.
Yeah.
Good lord.
Good at. I just beat Jimmy White at snooker.
I mean, Jimmy White didn't sink a ball.
Yeah. So, yeah, he's really got off. He's gone off. I think he's going to lose his ranking.
It's really bad.
Let's do the second part of this question. Is a real curveball from the first, I suppose. What was your last two Amazon purchases? Do you know?
Oh, sweet God. Honestly, this is so sad. I'm never home. So, and I have a cat, and someone comes and like looks after my cat. Listen, I'm trying to get laid off of this. I had gnats, like little flies. And last two Amazon purchases were like emergency buys to try to get rid of little flies. So one was like a very strange little lamp that would like cook them. And then the other one was some sort of vinegary substance that apparently they were attracted to. So makes me think they might be British, honestly.
Yeah.
They put out this little vinegar and they fall in and die. So I thought, and my cousin was in it. I was like, how did you even get here?
It's very, I mean, we've got fruit flies in our kitchen.
That's
and
what they are.
They are almost like, you think you've got rid of them. You haven't seen one for 2 days.
Endless.
You literally open a banana and they just appear out of nowhere. It's like, they're fucking annoying.
It's really when you realize the number one killer on earth are mosquitoes. You're like, yes. The smaller they get, you cannot get rid of fruit flies. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because of diseases and they pass, you know.
So not the Western world, though.
No, I mean, it is mostly sort of Africa.
Overall,
Yeah.
You'll be all, Julian, you're not going to die from a mosquito. I feel just confident saying that.
It's completely irrelevant.
Yeah. I think that's a great attitude.
Why is this on my radar?
Why is this man talking about it?
Why are these words coming out of your mouth? Trespassing in my ear rolls, please.
But yeah, so my last two Amazon purchases were like pathetic.
Yeah,
yeah.
I was just looking to see what my last thing I bought was a kickstand for my bike, which is quite a nice thing. Yeah,
what that you attach to your bike?
Yeah, what do you think I'm going to do
there? It could be one fixed to the garden floor or something that you.
Oh, you mean it's like a lock up thing? No, it's actually a kickstand. Okay. A kickstand is to when you sort of get on and off, sort of a
it's
little
that
balance.
Cool
thing.
Vibe. You hop off the bike and you're like, look, let's party.
Yeah. Because I've got like a child seat for my daughter. She sits on the back. She's three.
The vibe's getting less cool. The vibe is getting less cool.
But sometimes, like it's quite tricky. Like with her on the back,
it's hard
getting off.
To get pussy when seat's on the back.
When she's with me.
She was such a cock block, man.
Ruins the vibe.
Yeah.
But
it's not mine.
Yeah. I just kidnapped her because I'm a dangerous
I just stole
man.
This bike with this kid on it. Who's single? Hey, Jimmy White. You look terrible.
I've heard you like Bad Boys. Well, I just kidnapped the kid.
I'll be in jail shortly.
Let's make this quick.
And it will be.
Yeah. Julian, what was your have you done the Amazon purchases of late?
Mine the same too as last.
I just remembered you showed me one of yours last week, didn't you, Julian?
Yeah, and
me
I screenshot and put on our. I put it on our Patreon WhatsApp group.
Did you put it on?
Yeah.
Oh, you dirty boy!
I always show our patrons everything.
You do. You share too much, man. It's gross.
Some leave actually.
We've got this mad silly thing that we did where we've got a certain tier of our Patreon where they're in a WhatsApp group with us and it's
oh, wow
It's very fun, but it is chaotic. Like, I mean, at any given time, there's normally about 150 people or something in it. And it's,
oh my God.
Like, and it goes through phases where it's nonstop. Obviously, we tell everyone to mute it and just check in and chat when you want to. Yeah, like, engage when you want to. Don't, because like, some people have had to leave because they're like, it literally just like, you know, it's ruining my phone battery. So it's just getting hundreds and hundreds of messages.
My wife
a day.
Is 100%. I'm cheating. Wow, so, that is a crazy tier of Patreon. Can I ask, Julia, what is the financial?
No, it's not even like a very high tier. It's just, you don't have to be like, but most of the people on that tier don't join the WhatsApp. It's an optional.
Oh, right.
Once you're in this tier, you get the option. If you want to, you can join the WhatsApp. And we're sort of, it's very fun if you want to be, you know, if you're the sort of person that enjoy it. But some people, it's their worst nightmare. Do you know what I mean? Oh, so a lot of people just will sign up to that tier of Patreon and be like, that is not for me.
That is a lot.
And it also is very, but what's nice is that there's loads of little splinter groups that have come off it now. So there's like, that WhatsApp group started now a series of ones that some of them I'm not in and Julian's not in. And like, you know, there's one that Julian's in that I'm not, one of the spin-offs. And there's one that I'm in that Julian's not in. It's called ditch that car guy and go solo.
I do a solo.
I'm actually still in this group. Oh, hey, Carl.
Mine's called Stop Carrying That Passenger.
You must have a sore back.
Stand the human. Yeah. So wait, what was your purchase, Julian?
Well, it was a little cabinet from the bathroom to put my cleaning products in. And just,
what was the other one?
Some lingerie.
Yeah, it was some Amazon lingerie.
You know what? Next day delivery.
I suppose when you need it in a hurry, it's a good option.
I couldn't even try it on and first.
That's for your significant other. Oh, no, it's for you. That's sexy.
It wasn't for me, no, but I could pop on now if you...
Well, I'll pay whatever for that Patreon level. That sounds awesome.
That is, there is one where you actually just get a weekly dick pic, because that's our new one we're thinking of starting up.
Guess who's dick this is, Carl's or Julian's?
It's Carl, because I can see the fruit flies on it.
Oh, yeah. Mine stinks, guys. Yeah. Let's do enough. Actually, that's talking of the WhatsApp group. There was a question about that was sort of inspired by it, but I suppose, because are you in any WhatsApp groups? Is WhatsApp groups a common thing in?
Yeah, they are. My WhatsApp groups are definitely, you know, more with people in Australia or England or something versus. Yeah, it's not as much here. But
Australia's only just recently cottoned on, like, WhatsApp's been massive here for about 5 years. Like, but Australia, I remember, like, up until about 18 months ago, I'd go over there for gigs and, like, I'd say, I'll WhatsApp you so I can use my UK number. And they'd be like, what's WhatsApp?
Oh, really? Yeah, I feel
they took a while to get on board.
They're primitive people, let's be honest.
Yeah, that's culturally, you know.
They're still dying from mosquitoes, mainly. I feel like most of my Australian friends that we go through WhatsApp for the reasons you just said.
Yeah,
but I'm in a few, for sure.
I suppose the question then can be, zoom out from this question, I suppose it is, like, have you ever performed a bit inspired by a chat that you've had in, like, a WhatsApp group? I think I've definitely spitballed things or said silly jokes. I did it on stage once. It's terrible. I did a terrible joke on stage like a couple of months ago that was off the back of
like a lemon roller.
It was a real lemon roller. But it was about, and that came out of a WhatsApp. It was actually a WhatsApp group I'm in with Chris Martin and a couple of other comics. I think it was, or was it? It might have been out of that. But it was, So I told it to them and Chris jokingly said, like, you should do it on stage. But I'm in another WhatsApp group with some old childhood friends. A few of them are Irish, and we were talking about the Banshees of Inisherin. Have you seen the Banshees of Inisherin?
Absolutely,
great film.
Great film.
But what was interesting was, out of three of my Irish friends that are in the group, two of them really hated it, and one of them really loved it. And so I made the joke in the WhatsApp group that I said, "Oh, it's weird because I loved it," and I thought it would get a better than a 33% rating on Rotten Potatoes. And I did it. Great WhatsApp group joke, right?
I love that.
But then I thought, for a laugh, I'm going to do it on stage. Ah. it was like,
I can. It's so funny because that joke I think is so great, but I also can tell that people in the that happens a lot where people when people groan, I'm like, oh fuck you. Yeah. You cannot laugh or you can laugh, but don't demean groan. Me.
Yeah,
do not it's be almost like a self righteous thing when they groan, yes. like, oh, I'm yeah. smarter than that joke. No, yes. you
I'm better at this than you. Is yeah, the yeah, attitude. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Have you ever
that
heard
is a like, very, that's a great WhatsApp group joke.
Have you ever have you ever heard an audience member like sort of making such a horrible like response and sort of go like ugh to a joke or like sort of go oh my god. Like,
I've really heard, seriously. I've honestly heard like no.
Yeah.
You know and you're like you don't get this is not Facebook. You're not commenting on no, you don't get to do that.
Yeah. The best one I remember Sean Walsh actually the one who we did the thing he once was on stage at the Brighton Comedia and then one of the other comics was at the back and Sean like his style was quite manic on stage, it's very like full of energy and he, the other comic heard somebody get like turn to their friend and go is he all right do you think like, just real concern for his well-being
that is horrible is like,
oh
that's horrible do gross, we need to step it? In
yeah an intervention for this
no I mean I it's also sometimes when you hear such like we were saying before you'll hear such silence and what the silence gets filled with but I mean you know when people walk like the, one of the weirdest feelings is when you walk people and what you should do because you'll see someone physically be like this isn't for me and you'll your options are quietly digest the medicine or let everyone know that you've just had a very strange experience I've learned you just let it happen because when you go when you point out that you're not doing well with everyone, people
also
start to
go, and don't ask them where they're going.
No,
like, you know,
no, that's
I've,
over.
I've seen you've people lost. Bombing and then like somebody's literally
it can
just
be
leave.
Such a dead end.
And I've seen somebody go, oh, you're like, oh, you're going to the toilet or something. And their person has literally gone, no, I think you're shit. And it's like, oh,
yeah.
you're just
I
dead.
Saw two people once do a very coordinated one. And I didn't call
either.
That out. Yeah, you sit down. There's only 10 minutes left.
There's no, I mean, I think. That's the hardest heckle to come back from somebody saying you are shit.
Yeah,
like, what do you if it's from a genuine place. Like, I'm just not into it. I'm gonna go.
Yeah. Well, I just think you're really shit at your job. Yeah. Okay.
I bombed a show. This is probably the last show that I really bombed, and this was probably I don't know. It's probably like 6 months ago. And I mean, I'm not saying that every show is great, but there was a guy up front who I couldn't crack. And you know what happened? I just became obsessed with cracking him
and he wouldn't crack.
And then so when I would tell a joke and he would like chuckle, people would go, he laughed. And I'd go, this is what have I done? I have just created the worst environment ever where he's our barometer and it is bad.
Yeah. But it's so off-putting when you get a real like somebody just stony face in the front, arms folded. That you know, you, I think the worst
thing is
when well, the person who doesn't want to be there, and it's not somebody who's like it doesn't have to be somebody who's taking an issue with you. It's somebody who's there maybe with their partner or their friend wanted to go, and they don't want to be there. And they're just sort of like, oh, and they're sat at the front, so they're probably like, oh, they're going to talk to me.
Also, so people understand. Can feel very self-conscious in the front, and it's not their fault, but they're just in their head. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I mean, some people are terrified of it.
Even last night, there was a woman at my show who wanted to be part of the show, and you'd rather that than someone who just literally, like you
doesn't
said,
want to be
there
at
with
the
a
show.
Friend, doesn't want to be there,
wants to be a part of a different show.
Yes. Rather the Home and Away panel show, sort of.
Exactly. Let's see what other questions we got. Let's do this one. This is quite. What do people think of life business coaches that sell programs to teach you how to make money? Which is real. That's quite a modern thing. I mean, obviously, there's been like pyramid schemes forever, but like there seems to be a new wave on like Instagram, TikTok.
I'm getting loads of adverts off of like currency stocks, and the guys are really good at delivering it. Like, remember that Tay something guy? I'm just in my garage.
No.
With his Lamborghini. He
started
a few years ago. Canadian guy, I think.
Because there's a lot of influencers who pull that
Warren
shit.
Buffett,
it turns out they hire the cars, don't they? Say again?
Yeah, exactly. Warren they Buffett. Hire a house and just make loads of videos. But
it's
all bullshit, man. I was watching Warren Buffett weirdly last night talking about them, and he's Buffett, genuine.
It is Buffett, but from now on, I think we should go not only with Buffett, but he should start opening some restaurants called Buffett, Warren Buffett.
His fat brother.
his French cousin. Yeah.
He's Warren Buffett. You want to, how's everyone liking the crabs, huh?
But yeah, Warren Buffett.
He told you once, huh?
Because tell me, I don't know. I know the name Warren Buffett, but I have no idea what he does or why he's famous.
He's one of the richest people in the world. And
I should probably know who he is.
He might be the first billionaire, too. He was. Right.
Yeah.
He's a big investment guy. And okay. Yeah,
his companies are now worth, well, all of his stocks are now worth like him and that other guy, their business partners, the other big. But they remind me of the two guys out of Trading Places, Eddie Murphy.
Oh, yeah. They're
mm-hmm. like those two guys, yeah. aren't they? But they're yeah, worth right. like 800 billion, all of their stocks together. Yeah. It's insane.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. I think when I was, I think when I was more in like high school, late at night, these people would come on and they would, I remember there was a set of twin little people who would be like, we've got this mansion, you know, it turned out it was a dollhouse, but they, you know, they were just like, you can make all this money. And it seemed to kind of be relegated to that time, yes. that sort of person.
Yeah.
Who was up all
yeah,
night.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then now there is, like you were sort of saying, Julia, like a lot of it is, it's funny when you watch it because you go, I think your rich business model is taking advantage of people who want to be
yeah.
rich. Like, yeah. So, 100%. So like when you're atop a pyramid scheme, it's great. Yeah. And it does seem like there's a lot of that more now. And I mean, I think it's abhorrent. I actually, there is a comedian over here who was not good. And he has fully pivoted harsh.
Oh, really?
That's coming from me.
That's a really cutting way of describing a comedian.
He's Jackie Lemon Roller. And he is very, now he's gone full life coach.
Oh,
full,
man.
Give me your money. I'll coach you.
Yes.
And so you see that. Is
his name Alex by any chance? No.
No.
Oh, okay.
No,
is that another not good guy?
Yeah, that seems to be an easy pivot.
Because I mean, it's that I hate all that diary of a CEO sort of grind culture bullshit. Oh. I think I find it really cringy, but people love it. Yeah, young people are sort of lapping it up. It's they see it as aspirational, whereas I fear it just a bit. I find it just tedious.
The grind culture here is insane. I mean, the grind culture, because this country is like fully abandoned. People like my relatives, my whole family lives in the UK, and like. I see, even though I think the UK is taking a dive, you still see there are security nets for people still. That's just not here. And here people be like, look, you got to go to your office job and then you got to work for Uber all night. And right. then guess what? You got to work the night shift at Walmart. And you're like, what? Are you out of your fucking mind?
Yeah. Like, that whole concept of, you know, when you see these videos of something like, so my routine is I get up at 4 a.m. Then I exercise for 45 minutes and I sort of journal and I'm starting work at 5. I want to be starting work 4 hours before everyone else. And they describe this thing as if like, and it sounds horrendous. It's like, that is horrendous. The opposite of how I want to live my life.
And
like,
when do they have time to sort of put all the videos together and do it for everyone? Like, tell you
question.
What they're doing.
Yeah.
Get on with it then.
But also, like, that's the opposite of how life should be lived. You know what I mean? In terms of, you know, like, what I love most about being a stand-up is, you know, most nights I'll work 20 minutes. and that is enough work for one day for me. I think that is the optimum amount of work in one day. If I gig sort of, sometimes at weekends I might do a couple in a night in London. And, like, you know, so over the week I'm knocking out, you know, outside of festival season when I'm doing an hour-long show, a normal week I'm not working more than 2 hours in a week.
Yeah.
And that is my top end of effort I'm putting in.
I agree. But yet the whole day feels like it's a lot of stress getting ready for that, like that little window of time.
Oh yeah, there's still times when going to my 20 minutes of work, I'm like, oh good.
I gotta figure out an easier career path. This is insane.
I might go part time actually. Yeah. I stop doing 10 minutes.
You bring someone else out for your next like for 10 minutes too. So I better business partner.
Yeah, exactly. It's a share the workload.
Somebody has replied about this question saying a lot of these sort of new, you know, you can make loads of money types are former Bitcoin people that basically lost loads of money. And now they've sort of pivoted into that.
That sounds
about right.
I mean, when you look at the way like our societies are tiered and stuff, it is just the idea of making as much as possible on the back of anything is just not really a great long-term strategy.
No. And also, I don't understand the idea of, I suppose if you get so rich, you could retire at 50 or something. But a lot of people work so hard with the idea of like, when I retire, I'm gonna have loads of money and like free time. It's like, yeah, but you'll be 65.
Yeah,
like,
you're gonna be tired. You're just gonna want to go to bed.
You have loads of money.
Sit down anyway.
Yeah, but your knees won't work.
You're like, I'll be golfing. Yeah. I'll be rock climbing. You're like, you will die. You'll be dying shortly.
Exactly. Whereas I'd rather be, you know, not as rich, be, you know, poorer, but have loads of free time now. And then just die. That's what I'm going to do when I'm old. I'm just going to die.
My agent like literally worked his life out where he was like, this is how much I need. And once I get to that point, I'm done.
Yeah.
And he's like, and he's going to stay in like Hawaii, maybe not where he was going to before, but he was like, I'll be able to split my time. He has it all gridded out. I'm like, that's the way. That is the way. No kids.
Let's quickly. I just realized we'll chat for 5 more minutes, but
yeah, great.
We haven't actually chatted about the fact you'll come into London, which is...
I thought that was all over the papers, though. Do we even need to get into that?
it's big news, apparently.
It's been on the broadsheets, yeah.
I was going to say, it's very big. I heard it was
Do you come to... Do you gig in the UK? Have you gigged here much?
No, not really. Well, it's so funny you said the thing about the wake, because... And I always find wake jokes great. Even though yours was a sad story, I laughed at it. The last time that I think I did stand up there was the day of my grandmother's funeral. My family lives in like the West Midlands. Yeah. And so my grandmother passed away and then we were all at the wake and my cousin was like, oh, there's a show. There's like a stand-up show like downtown. And we were drunk and I was like, I'll go. And like 10 of my relatives in funeral outfits and me in my funeral suit went there and I did like 15 minutes and it went about as well as you would guess. It was like, it was not great energy. God. But I've never done like a tour. I'm doing now is a tour. So I've never done that. So I'm very interested to see how that
goes. And is it a UK tour? How many dates are you doing?
I'm doing Glasgow. And then a lot around England, but then I'm doing like Ireland on September 17th. Lovely. And then, just like Manchester, Bristol, Cardiff. I almost said Melbourne. I went into my Australia dates. Then I'll be in Melbourne, which is close to you. But yeah, so, you know, I think it's like 6 or 7 shows, like Glasgow, cool. London, Dublin.
When are you in London?
I'm in London on the 15th of September.
Nice.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. I'm very interested. My special is called England, Weed and the Rest. And a lot of it is just about England. It was not really a think piece when it came to the title, but a lot of it is about England because my whole family's English. I was raised by English immigrants and stuff.
So they moved out. What part of America did they move out to?
They moved to Wisconsin, which is like the heart of the Midwest, horrible winters. But my mother thought she was moving to Beverly Hills. And so my mother was like, sold a false bill of goods and then got there and was like basically staying in the Arctic. Yeah. With people who like beer and cheese, and she was like, "Oh dear, I don't know." My dad was like, "It'll be fine," but she was like, "She was like, she didn't laugh for 6 months." From? They live in mainly Stourbridge, so like just out, you know, close-ish to Birmingham.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Which I would say my worst live podcast ever was in Birmingham in front of my family, which was great.
Oh yeah, where was that? Was it the Glee?
Yeah, I think it was the Glee.
Yeah.
It was real bad.
It's a cool city, Birmingham, though. Birmingham in this country, Birmingham gets a bit of like, so it's weirdly dismissed as like a bit of a shithole, but like
I know
because it's the second biggest city in terms of population, isn't it? But
I think, and it's gotten better and better.
The layout is a bit jarring.
Well, because the center of it is a bit too packed in,
like the road layout. It's just a bit jarring sometimes, but it's a nice. But like,
it's got
nice
lovely
people.
Suburbs. I think they're nice people. I think it gets a bad rap unfairly.
Saw on something on TikTok where they said that the worst accent in England was the Brummie, and
I wouldn't disagree hardly. Like, you know, it's
a hard one to fight.
There's a few that would challenge it, I reckon, but
Rummy is the slummy brummy is very, it's real.
Yeah. Essex, and that's like a real dark, a real thick Essex accent is like really grating, I think.
Yes. Yeah. My family is very strong brummy. Very
right.
Strong.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did they fare in America, you know, in the Midwest?
Well, my mother, when she was a child, was given the options of swimming lessons or elocution, and she took elocution.
Nice.
So she'll probably drown, but people understood her pretty well in Wisconsin.
Understood her screams for help. Yeah. Help me, Squire.
Yeah. Someone save me from hell. Yeah.
May you throw me an armband.
She's writing calligraphy notes in a bottle. I can't read this shit. What the hell is she saying?
All right, well, let's wrap up proceedings. It's been really good talking to you, Gareth. Thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you guys for having me. And if anyone over there wants to go see my shows, you can go to GarethReynolds.com. And it's like September 13th to the 24th. And I really appreciate you guys having me on.
It's good fun, man. Good to chat to you.
And what's your podcast, Gareth?
The Dollop.
My podcast is called The Dollop. And then I have a new podcast that comes out in like a week called We're Here to Help. That I'm doing with my friend Jake Johnson, which is like a call-in advice show. So those are my main two podcasts.
Cool.
I'm probably going to be on this one from now on. Is that crazy?
Yeah.
You're a regular. With,
you're taking Cole's position.
Yeah. you can have it.
That's a lot, Julian.
You've heard what my work ethic's like. I could actually do some time off this
is
one
this
hour
Julian
a week.
Tells me this wasn't recording? Is that what
All right. Well, that's the end of the podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks, patrons and all that. And other than that, we'll see you next time. Thanks, Gareth.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
You're actually changing the podcast. I think you're right.
You know, I think you're right. Oh, you died of AIDS in an alleyway.